This is Karen Testerman with on WSMN. This is Karen Testerman. Welcome to New Hampshire's Nashua radio station here on WSMN. We have in studio with us Kathy Rago, who is the area coordinator for the Network for Educational Opportunities. And I want to say thank you to Mary Murphy, our money guru, who with her first independent franchise of Schwab here in New Hampshire, is sponsoring this hour of programming. Mary is not the owner and not just a financial advisor. And if you need to get in touch with her, her number is 603-595-0581. 603-595-0581. And she runs these workshops every Tuesday night, and there is no cost to attend them. So you might want to call and find out what they're all about, 6 to 7 p.m. on a weekly basis, or a biweekly basis, I should say. And very, very interesting. So the legislature has been very, very busy. They're still considering Stand Your Ground. I think they may have pushed it off until action today instead of voting on it on Wednesday like they normally would. But that I find is interesting. And they voted against the bill that would have stopped the expansion of Obamacare into the state. I don't know where that's coming from, except that I don't know, insurance companies or somebody wants to continue to make big money on that one.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. They did vote to move ahead with that, unfortunately, but yes.
Right. Well, what happened here on medical marijuana? I guess they passed that through the...
Yes, actually, by I think pretty significantly.
Yeah. The question I have, though, that I wonder about is on the federal level, what are they going to be doing about these states that are passing to go ahead with, quote, medical marijuana, and yet it's a violation of the federal drug laws?
That's true. That's California is the prime example of that.
Yes. And so, you know, and I think Washington State and Oregon also passed it. So these are sort of rogue states. Are they now, does that now affect other laws and other areas in?
Well, that's rather interesting because state law doesn't supersede federal law, or I might have the wrong term there, but federal law is supposed to be over state law. And so now that these states have come in and said, yeah, we're going to go ahead and make marijuana legal, whether it's medical, whatever, you know, you think about California and all the little medical, quote unquote, pot shops that are opening up all over the place. My concern with the whole medical marijuana is I certainly don't have an issue if someone is seriously ill and needs that. My problem is going to be the regulation of it to make sure that we don't have 1,000 little pot shops and all the doctor has to do is say, yeah, you have a cold, here's a prescription, go get yourself some pot.
Right. Well, and interestingly enough, that seems to be making it a necessity for the state government now to start coming up with someone to regulate all of that.
Now, of course.
But this is a libertarian issue from what I understand. A lot of my libertarian friends are all saying that it should be legalized and removed. But if we have to grow government, isn't that an antithesis to their other mantra, which is we've got to limit the size of government?
Yeah, that's a very good question. You should probably get a libertarian on here and have that conversation.
I really would like to know how do we shrink the size of government when we're going to continue to pass these issues that really end up growing the size of government. How do we do that?
Good.
It amazes me. Yeah, Kathy. unfortunately, I'm sorry that Matt wasn't able to call in. Apparently, he was at a meeting. He did tell me that he was going to be in this meeting, and he was going to. He thought he was going to be done in time to be able to call into the show to talk about the HB 299. And so maybe you can help fill us in on some of the things that are going on with that.
Well, part of the reason that I'm even paying attention actually to HB 299 and trying to follow it is because I'm on the board of a startup charter school that we're trying to start up in the Lakes region called Compass Classical Academy. So we're working on our application as well. But the issue is that last year in the legislature, the last session, we passed a bill that tweaked some of the charter funding language. Well, as Charlie Arlinghouse pointed out in his article, the intention was to make it easier to fund new charters. And again, it's one of those unintended consequences because the Attorney General's office took it differently and basically said that you have now made it harder. Of course, here it is a year later to fund charters because of the way the law has been tweaked. So HB 299 was basically going to revert to the old language. And that would please the Attorney General's office and those folks. The Board of Ed has basically slapped a moratorium on starting any new charter schools because they part of their reason is they feel like this the new language prevents a legislature from binding the hands of the following legislature, which I find rather interesting because legislatures do that all the time.
Let's look at that. Now, HB 299 would basically amend the law that was passed last session. Mm-hmm. On charter school funding. And from my conversations with some of the Finance Committee members, there is sufficient money there. They built in a way to add money if needed so that these charter schools could get started.
Right. All they needed to do is the Board of Ed needed to come to the Finance Committee and say, we need more money for X, Y, and Z.
Which the Board of Ed decided instead to go to the Attorney General's office.
Correct. They didn't even go to the Finance Committee and say that they needed more money. They went directly to the Attorney General's office.
So they went outside of the set protocol to accomplish this. So
correct.
Thank you to the Board of Education for trying to stifle our children and from getting another opportunity to be all that they can possibly be. So, okay. So the Finance Committee has done this. The Attorney General's office has basically said you can't go for the money. Now, this is where it gets really confusing. But we pass a budget right now, this year. They are working on the budget for 2014 and 2015.
Well, it has to be approved in June, and it starts July. So it'd be July. It'd go 2 years.
Okay, so it's July of 2013 to June through the end of June of 2015. Okay.
Correct.
So now that money then gets projected for the following 6 months into 2015. So the money that you passed in 2009 would have, or 2011.
It would have been
the first 6 months of 2011.
Yeah.
You passed the money so that it would be cover all of this time up through June of this year. Now, the Attorney General's office has said that if you went back and asked for that additional money, that you can't have it because it's not been projected. Somehow I'm losing something in the translation here. It sounds like we're playing a whole lot of politics with a whole lot of our kids.
Well, I basically have to agree with you on that. The other hand to this, there's actually two parts to it, is the federal government gives the state monies to open new charters. And that is one area I do have to give kudos to President Obama. They are few and far between, but he is a proponent of charter schools and school choice and school options. what's happened is because they've done this where they've stopped funding new charters, I believe, and again, Matt Southerton could confirm it, but I believe that we left on the table, I think, $800,000 or something like that of federal money that we ended up not using because of not opening charters, new charters. So there's the other piece to it that we're going to be losing federal dollars to open new charters.
Oh, so we have funds that came out of your pocket and my back pocket and went to the federal level, and now they've washed it through the system and they're sending it back to us in the sense of charter schools, okay?
Yeah.
To help fund these charter schools. And
you could put it that way.
Well, and now we're not going to let you spend that money because your state decides now that they're going to hold it up in some legality that doesn't exist.
Yes, that's actually a very interesting way to put it, but that's very... That's touche. There you go. It's insane.
Somehow we have to get back into control of what's going on. And quite honestly, I think it has to be, you know, the Republican Party came out yesterday or recently with a new plan to win the seats the next time. And what they don't seem to understand is that we're really not interested in winning elections. We're interested, at least I am on the local level, of being able to live my life, to be able to spend my money, to be able to make decisions about my children, to be able to make decisions for my life that doesn't impact anybody else, but just be able to go on and do the things that we know we're supposed to do. And the Republican Party somehow has come back with this edict or this decision that they need to be more inclusive. They don't need to stand for anything anymore. Some place along the line, they forgot that the definition of the republic is that it is at the local level. It's at the individual taking care of their family, their property, the things that affect them, and then when they have anything left over, that they share it with someone else. And that's the basis of a republic, as I understand it. So we tried to do the socialistic thing way back when with William Bradford, and half of the people starved to death, until they decided that they were going to rely on the individual family, the basic economic unit, to take care of themselves first and then take care of others as a result. And somehow we've got to be getting back to those basic things. And the reason I bring this up is because it seems like the government is out here taking care of literally everything. And if we look at welfare and what welfare has done to the black population, for example, where we've said the best thing you can do is have no father in the home. If you have more children, then we'll give you more money. If you don't, as long as you don't have a father in the home, and as a result, 70% of the black homes are fatherless. And when we look at the justice population and so forth, we find out that guess what? The majority of those people that are in prisons or in our juvenile detention halls are fatherless kids. They have no relationship, if there was a father in the home, but more than likely there wasn't one. And
I actually had a friend of mine who used to work for, is it DHS? And he had commented years ago how when Mother's Day would come around, all the young men in the center would want Mother's Day cards to give to their moms. When Father's Day came around, none of them ever asked for a Father's Day card to give to a father.
Right.
It's really, really sad, actually.
It is. And actually, there was a greeting card company that actually took cards into the prisons and experienced exactly the same thing, where they thought it was such a big hit at Mother's Day that they'd get the same reception at Father's Day, and it just fell flat. And if you, the whole thing is that fathers are needed for many, many reasons, and there's a good reason for having a father in the home. Every child deserves to know who their mother and father were biologically, because they need to know not only medically, but also there are certain things that we're finding scientifically that happen to children as they're nurtured by their mothers and as they're brought along by their fathers, that there are certain hormones that kick in to place. There are certain values that they learn. And it's very important that we have both a mother and a father in those homes.
This is Karen Testerman, and you've been listening to a pre-recorded program on New Hampshire's Family Radio, WLMW, 90.7 FM. This week, the Supreme Court of the United States will be taking up some very important cases regarding the definition of marriage. One is the California Proposition 8, and the other is the Defense of Marriage Act that was signed into law by President Bill Clinton back in the early 90s. Now, there's been some misinformation about the Defense of Marriage Act. It actually is the definition that is accepted according to federal law, but it also allows the states to determine for themselves what their definition of marriage is, and 30 states have already said in their constitutional amendments that they would have marriage defined between one man and one woman. The question is also coming up in New Zealand, and perhaps one of the best explanations I've come across appears in Mercator.net, in which two lesbians could get married, then why not two sisters? And they explain very clearly why government should be involved in marriage in the first place. It says, quote, "Marriage is associated with romance because romance is the kind of desire that aims at bodily union with its potential to beget children. Partners of the same sex cannot achieve such a union no matter what they do. Strictly speaking, therefore, they cannot achieve sexual union at all. They can have sexual encounters in which they each give each other pleasure and no doubt produce a feeling of being more united. But this is quite a different thing from the organic union that a man and a woman achieve in sexual intercourse, particularly when it results in the conception of a new human being. It is that organic conjugal union that defines marriage, and its potential to generate children that creates the state's interest in marriage. The state needs marriages to produce new citizens and to ensure that they grow up into decent, law-abiding citizens. It is all too evident in New Zealand's poverty and abuse data how disastrous it is for children and society when marriage culture breaks down." And so, this has been Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths, and I hope you'll tune in next week